You are listening to Horror Nerds at Church, a ridiculously queer podcast where we take a deep dive into a horror film and talk about how it connects to queerness, religion, and theology. I'm Pastor Emily, and I am the blue goo that makes everything disappear.
And I'm Pace Warfield, and I am the ovipositor kink that one of the writers must have had in the creation of this movie. If you could only see Emily's face, dear listeners. Follow us on Patreon at patreon.com/horrornerdsatchurch. It's only $5 to sign up, or $10 if you want to be an extra fancy horror buff. But this month you get our Prey movie commentary, you get our Obi-Wan BooTube, and also
The Prey movie commentary was the best of the movies that we did for movie commentary, but also was the last one. And was last August. So I have no idea what it actually was like, but...
Yep.
I think delightful is the main...
And you also got our Obi-Wan BooTube, but probably also our Ahsoka... Well, definitely our Ahsoka BooTube, because it's already made and it hasn't come out yet. And then Horror Buffs, you get our coverage of the Solo film. So that's what's going on on Patreon world.
Also, speaking of that, I finished watching Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yay!
You know.
Did you like it?
Up to. I did. I liked it way better than I ever thought I would when it first came out. I also like Obi-Wan more now than I did before.
Right. I can't wait, though, to talk about it. So we have yet to record it, so I'm excited for the conversation when we do record it. Which means I need to rewatch it.
Me too.
So, anyway, how have you been? How's life?
Not bad. I've been, life. Life has been life. Our dear friend River, a friend of the podcast River, is here. So, we have been hanging out and watching a lot of Doctor Who. I think I got to introduce River to the second Doctor. I don't know that she's very familiar with the classic Doctors, and so we just watched The Enemy of the World.
That's a fun one. I love how Patrick Troughton plays both the Doctor and the bad guy.
Yeah. I am really enjoying the second Doctor. I wish that there were more of the original films, because I definitely like him better when it's the actual original than I do when it's like the audible version or the animated redo. But yeah,
sadly, such is life with the first and second Doctors.
What are you up to?
I'm also Doctor Whoing it, as no one is surprised. I'm finally catching up to where I should be in my year of trying to watch Doctor Who, which means I just finished season 5 of the revived series with Matt Smith. No, what's his name? Matt, whatever his name is. That Doctor.
Matt Smith.
I was right. Okay. The 11th Doctor. And I am about halfway through the 8th season of Classic Who, which is the second of the third Doctor's run. So that's about where I am there. Beyond that, I am super excited because I am a book collector, as many people know. And so I was able to find, through Thrift Books, all of the missing Star Wars episode novelizations that I didn't have for $25. So about the price of one single hardback. I got all of these in hardback form from Thrift Books. So I'm happy about that. They should be arriving today. And nice. That's what I've been up to. It's been really busy at work. So today is kind of a catch up on everything day, including writing a curriculum lesson that I'm supposed to do that I haven't even started or looked at in like 3 months.
I have to write my ritual for that too. We're basically all in the same place, except River started a couple days ago.
Of course she did. She also, I feel like, if I remember correctly, she had a conversation with them too. So she probably has the best idea of all of us about what we're supposed to do. So.
I just finished last night the first season of Sarah Jane Adventures. So I have now. I now have the whole first season of Sarah Jane Adventures and the first two seasons of Torchwood. And I promised River I would not watch Silence in the Library without her, because it is the inaugural. It is the first appearance of River Song. So we're going to watch that at some point. Probably today. Later today.
Love it. Love it.
Also, my next young adult book series reread is going to be the Lunar Chronicles novels, which I read a while ago, but are just fun. They're like sci-fi future-ish takes on fairy tales, kind of. They were fun when I read them the first time, and so I'm excited to read them again and see what happens. See what they're like. I'm taking them on my trip. I'm going on a trip this week.
I had to overcome a lot of internalized feelings about rereading books in the past like 5 years or so. Mm-hmm. I used to always refuse to reread books because I have so many books I want to read in the world in my TBR pile that's like, it's a waste of time to reread a book I've already done. And I've had to kind of combat that against me. But I still have issues with, like, I'm rereading the Animorphs series still, and I still sometimes as I'm rereading them, I'm like, why am I wasting so much time reading these when I could be reading something I haven't read? And so it's an ongoing struggle for
pace. So, actually, friend of the podcast, Stephanie Kaler, wrote in one of her zine articles about she was a high school English teacher and is now a school librarian and has done a lot of work on like what does it look like to get kids to read and to love reading. And she talked about that there are different, that you can think of books as food. So like there's the like grilled cheese sandwich. It is comfort, or I think about it as mac and cheese. I don't remember which one she actually said, but it is comfort food and it is nourishing, but it's not gonna like push you. It's not like adventurous. And then for a lot of like US based white folks, lasagna would be the like, this'll like really give you, it's dense, it's got lots of stuff in it, it'll really like fill you up. And then there's like Ethiopian food where like you're not as familiar with it. It's kind of pushing your boundaries, that sort of thing. She had one more category and I don't remember what it was, but she talks about them like that. And I think that that is really helpful to me, particularly because sometimes it's hard to food, right? And so, and in the pandemic, it has been, it like when the pandemic started, I stopped being able to read. Like, I just couldn't get myself to read books. And it was really hard. And for a long time, I, like you, have, like, there are some books that I'll, like, reread, but that I would reread. But that was when I was reading a lot of books. And so I, like, knew that I was, like, rereading a book. But also, I was reading, like, all these books for book challenges and all these other things that were new books to me. But then once the pandemic hit and I couldn't read, then it was extra hard to read books that I'd already read because I felt like it's already hard for me to read I shouldn't be rereading something. And I talked to Stephanie about it, and her suggestion, which I really appreciated and really worked, was that it's okay to reread stuff, and that, like, if you're having trouble reading, especially, then rereading something you know you like is a good way to get back into the habit of reading a lot. But also that there's nothing wrong with rereading a book you love. That is a good thing. You are reading and you are enjoying reading and stuff. So, yeah, all of that to say, I feel you. And also, I'll try and find which zine that the book thing was in, and we can link to it. But yeah, I'm a fan of both.
I was just gonna say, and the weird thing is for me that, like, last year I read something like 120 books or something, and so, like, I'm clearly reading quite a bit. I don't know why I still have this stigma that I can't, but anyway, it is what it is. And it's like a self-imposed, like, I don't judge other people for any of their reading. It's just like holding myself to higher standards. Like,
weird, you don't do that at all for anything ever.
Right. So, yeah, but
dear listeners, Pace does that for a lot of things, just so you know.
It's true. But I'm finding that rereading books, that especially books that I read as a kid, that now that I'm an adult, like, it's fun to go back to them in a way that because, like, I'm a different person. So even though I'm rereading the same book, like, it's still like a different experience than the first time. So for me, though, it wasn't the pandemic that slowed down my reading. It was gender dysphoria. So when I finally had part of that taken care of, I mean, it still happens. Like, I've been reading nonstop since, pretty much. But that lasted for, like, 20 years of my life.
You know. Yeah. I am nervous about rereading books from when I was a kid. Because I don't know how they've aged, and I don't know that I want to ruin the books that I loved. So, like, there are some books that I'm like, probably never gonna reread Harry Potter, because I don't, at least not until she's dead, because I don't know that I can separate out, I don't know that I can separate out the author from the books in this particular time of the world. And I don't know that the books will have aged well. But there's other books like The Babysitter's Club that I loved growing up. And so then I'm like, I don't know. Do I like it? Do I not like it? Is it gonna ruin it for me?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah. I am curious if any of our listeners have thoughts on, like, rereading books and what, if they have had experiences of rereading books that they loved when they were a kid and how that's gone, or if anybody has reread Babysitter's Club specifically, please tell us.
Yeah. Please. I've been thinking about, I never read the Babysitter's Kid Club. Blah, let me try again. I've never read the Babysitter's Club when I was a kid as much as I wanted to, because they look so fun, but weird gender things and stuff about parents' expectations of me and things kept me from them. But I did watch the Netflix series when it came out. What is that, 2 years ago or so? 3 years ago? And I loved it. Yeah. So I feel like after I finish my Animorphs and Goosebumps read-throughs, I'm probably going to do Babysitter's Club for the first time for me. But it looks like it's going to be fun.
Yeah. So it might actually be worth it to watch that series. I did not watch the series because I was like, I don't know.
Oh, it was so good. Another
House.
And
got me
queer characters and stuff too. Terrible, it's so, so good. Well, yeah, but Full House was always kind of
okay.
Terrible.
I might have to check it out. Full House, yeah, but it was one of my, like, comfort shows, and so then watching Fuller House, like, it's one of the few that I didn't even finish the first season. Like, usually I'm like, okay, I'll watch it, and then I, like, suffer through the whole first season, and this one I was like, nope, stopping in the middle.
Having a vocal Christian nationalist as one of the main characters, the show's going to be kind of crappy. Playing one of the main characters.
Who?
Candace, whatever her name is. The person who plays DJ. Candace Cameron, is that her name?
Yeah.
Person, please.
I didn't know that.
The oldest sister. That's DJ, oh, right? Because no. Stephanie's the middle and then Michelle's the youngest. Yeah. So yeah, DJ.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I didn't know that. I don't keep track of who's Christian nationalist. Great. Well, yep. Now I'm extra glad that I'm not watching it.
Yep. Also, shout out to Reading Glasses podcast. One of these days I want to get the hosts of that show onto our podcast, especially if we ever do, which we will do one of these days, The Creature from the Black Lagoon, because one of the co-hosts of that podcast wrote an amazing book about that film. So anyway, but that podcast has so many great reading tips and stuff. And that also, similar to Stephanie helping you get out of your reading slump, that podcast helped me get out of some of my reading slump too. So check them out wherever you get your podcasts. Reading Glasses.
What is it called?
Reading Glasses.
Okay. Feels less.
Yeah, much better. I'm even going to try camera on at first. And if I need to turn it off, I will. But for now, it seems to be working.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we are covering Alien vs. Predator Requiem.
Aliens.
Yes, Predator. Thank you for that Requiem. S. It is. When we first started, I thought I liked it, but I'm to the point with you now where I'm like, this is just so silly at this point. Aliens versus Predator Requiem. 2007, directed by the brothers Strauss, who are most known for their film Skyline, which I have not seen. But anyway, 2007 is the year that we had a lot of trilogies come out. Or the third entry in a lot of trilogies. So Spider-Man 3, Shrek the Third, Ocean's 13 all came out this year. But then we also had Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Bourne Ultimatum. I think that's the third one in Bourne Ultimatum.
I was going to say, I think that's also a third.
300. Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End, which is a fourth. Transformers. Ghost Rider. Amazing Grace. Next. Waitress. Love that movie. Knocked Up. Evan Almighty. Live Free or Die Hard. Ratatouille. Across the Universe, Elizabeth the Golden Age, and There Will Be Blood. A lot of big movies that year.
Nine of those.
Nice. And then in the horror world, though, we had Sunshine, which we covered on season 4.
So good!
Halloween, the Rob Zombie remake, which we covered on season 1 before Emily's time, so they did not see that one, I'm pretty sure. 30 Days of Night, which we covered in season 3.
Creepy.
And then we had Murder Party, Primeval, The Messengers, Hannibal Rising, Zodiac, Dead Silence, Premonition, The Hills Have Eyes 2, Grindhouse, which includes both Death Proof and Planet Terror, 28 Weeks Later, Hostel 2, 1408.
Wait, is 28 days later?
28 weeks both? Later.
Yeah, but there's, is there a movie?
Yes, it's a sequel to 28 Days Later.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't see the sequel, but I saw the first one. That's why I was like, what? Okay, continue.
Resident Evil Extinction, which is the third movie in that franchise, so another weird trilogy. Return to House on Haunted Hill. Saw 4, The Mist, I Am Legend, which we talked about in our season 3 retrospective, and then Sweeney Todd. So a lot of horror movies that year as well.
Yeah. I only saw like 2. This was shortly after my Hannibal Lecter Silence of the Lambs. Oh no, I can't do horror anymore moment. So, yeah.
So when was the first time you saw this movie that we are covering?
For this podcast. Have your shots, folks. Yeah, we just watched it.
And
what about you?
I first saw this about 5 or 6 years ago. I'm not sure exactly when I was trying to do a complete watch through of the Alien franchise. And I didn't like it then. And I had only watched it that time until this podcast, when I watched it a second time with Emily on Saturday, and then a third time this morning, as I usually watch it two times when I do a podcast episode. One time for, like, just watch and enjoy, and the second time to take notes is my usual MO for behind the scenes.
That is not my usual MO. Just watch it close enough that I can take notes and remember. Although, if there's something that, like, delays our recording or something, then I'll watch it again if I forget things about it.
I'm too distractible to take note. Like, I feel like I need to watch it once just to feel it and enjoy it, or if I don't enjoy it like this one, then, you know, just to get it and to follow along. But then when I'm watching notes, like, I'm so into the nitty-gritty that it's hard for me to, like, get a sense of, did I actually like the movie? I don't remember, you know, that kind of thing. So yeah,
that's real. And especially with this one, like, I probably would have benefited from watching it again, because there was so much that just did not, I could not figure out. But
doubtful, though, to be honest. It's okay. Not that, it doesn't, yeah. So some behind the scenes for this movie. The brother director duo was pitched the idea for the first Alien versus Predator, but it was rejected. But their pitch was good enough that they were hired for this movie. They used their own special effects company called Hydraulix. They originally wanted it to tie in with Predator 2 by having Adam Baldwin reprise his role as Agent Garber, but he was unavailable, so the weird military sergeant guy who nukes the place was going to be that guy from Predator 2, the military dude from Predator 2. It was originally called Alien vs. Predator, Survival of the Fittest. Thankfully, that name was scrapped, but Aliens vs. Predator Requiem doesn't make sense either. We'll get to that in our deep dive. This is commonly the case with, like, slashery kind of low-budget horror movies, is that this movie, that directors were hired less than a year from the movie when it was supposed to be released, and it only had a budget of $40 million. So it just is a movie made on a budget really fast, under a year, and that explains a lot. And then it also
so much,
right? And then it's also just like the first Alien versus Predator, this one also has the distinction of being a Razzie Award nominee for the worst sequel or prequel in the year it came out.
I mean, I think this one deserves it more than the other one. I liked Alien versus Predator more than Aliens versus Predator.
Fair. What is your one sentence summary?
A woman is ignored and still saves people.
That's pretty much all of the Alien movies we've discovered. Mine is Space Slashers versus Space Action Requiem. Ours are about the same, so take a shot either way, I guess.
Oh no, you froze.
So, you froze. I guess we... So did you're you, back. But now you're back.
Oh no, what did you say? You said ours are...
I don't know. Oh, I just said take a shot no matter what.
They're almost the same... Oh yeah. Yeah, they are. Yep, yep. Anyway, so this film. I do appreciate that the Predator tries to clean up its mess. Like, I appreciate that. Well done.
Yay, good job, Predator.
Yeah.
Does a horrible job of it, but at least it tries.
I mean, it's true. Maybe. The Predator ship should not have tried to take baby xenomorphs with them. And that would have solved a lot of the problem. Then they'd only have the one that they had to, like, hunt down and find and stuff.
Yep.
Just saying.
I liked how this movie kind of starts off like Jurassic Park a little bit with the opening with the hunters, and there's like shaking ferns so you can't see the alien stuff. Seems like a very nice homage to Jurassic Park. But that gets into the horror-ness of this movie.
Yeah. So, okay. There were a couple points, but one of the points at which I was like, okay, this feels like a horror film setup. Look at me and my tropes. It feels like a horror film setup because there's a cute girl and a nerdy pizza delivery guy, a mysterious death in the woods, and police involvement with a TBD on if they're awful or not. Turns out they're not awful, but they're not helpful the way they could be. They're like, some help, some not. And ultimately make the wrong decision because they don't follow the lead of the military mom. I should have had that be my one sentence summary.
Yeah.
Military mom is ignored and still saves people.
But. Yep. I agree 100%. It really feels like a slasher setup, especially introducing the teens right away, like the nerdy pizza dude, the cute girl, all that stuff. But then, like, at some point about halfway through, it feels like it shifts into a post-apocalyptic genre where you have a band of survivors on a mission to try to escape whatever situation they're in, try to find the helicopter, try to get to the landing zone and stuff, and the complicated stuff there.
That's true. That's really true. Well, and there's the, like, there's major body horror in it. Like, the body horror is a big thing, especially when we get to all of the pregnant people.
Yeah.
later on. There's just a lot of body horror. But it's both that and it's, like, watching people disintegrate because of the acidic blood and that sort of thing. But then also, there's the, like, I guess my question is... Is the anxiety, because one of the things that we've talked about is a hallmark of horror is anxiety, right? The anxiety with people. And I didn't feel the same anxiety, and I was wondering if part of how that anxiety is manifest in horror movies is because we don't get it from the predator's perspective as much. Like, in horror movies, when we do get it from the, like, villain's perspective, we don't actually see the villain. Like, it is literally, like, we are the villain's eyes in the bushes or whatever. But in this, we see the predator's whole body or invisibleness or whatever, instead of seeing it from the predator's perspective. So I wasn't sure about that. If that's thing that shifts it.
I think that's very compelling. I am inclined to agree with that. And that one of the really cool things about slashers, especially in the 70s, is this advent of like showing it from the killer's perspective, and it and just exactly like you're saying, the way that increases anxiety and stuff. And another movie by Paul W.S. Anderson, who directed the first Alien vs. Predator, but also directed Resident Evil. And when he was talking about Resident Evil, he says, you always know in a horror movie, someone's going to be fucked if you see them through a camera. Like, you see, like, the camera view of them. And I'm like, I feel like seeing through the killer's eyes is another way. You always know they're going to be fucked. And when you don't have either of that, it just kind of
that's when it
takes away shifts. Some of that.
Yeah. Well, and I think and that more towards action. More towards action. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we, like, we see it from the predator's perspective, but without the, like, sympathy or anxiety for the sympathy for or the anxiety from the aliens, because that's really who the predator is after. Like, the humans are collateral damage, basically, for the predator, for the military, for anybody. But when we do see it from the predator's perspective, it is mostly focused on the aliens, the xenomorphs. And we don't really have sympathy for them. because they're the usual villains in the Alien franchise. So
I think that gets to the shift, because we do see a lot in the first half of the film, like when it's still kind of in that slasher trope. We get the alien, the heat vision of the alien chasing a few of the humans, like the hunters in the woods and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But then, like, at some point in the midway of the film, we no longer see any of the heat vision or anything from the alien anymore from that point forward and stuff.
I thought the Predator had the heat vision.
Yeah, that's what I meant, the Predator. They're both aliens, okay. So.
They are. But yes. This is part of the, like, everything that confuses me. It seemed like the
yes.
Predator had heat vision or night vision. But it kind of seems like X-ray vision. I don't know. But because the aliens don't have heat, aren't warm-blooded. So it's only helpful to a certain extent to have the heat vision on. And so then it makes sense that the Predator is like, okay, no more heat vision because that's not working anyway. But, I do have to say, I know you said the Predator didn't do a great job, but even with the bad job that the Predator did of trying to clean up its mess, its investigation was much more effective than any of the humans. And it was actually better at the disappearing evidence because of this weird blue goo that all of a sudden they have a way to destroy evidence.
Right.
A little suspicious.
Mm-hmm. And the blue goo magically only works on what they're trying to disappear, not everything around it as well.
Right. Because why would it be equally applicable to everything? That would just be a thing they have to address in the plot.
For me, though, I love that line. At least now I know who ordered sausage lovers, speaking of the teens. Because so much toxic masculinity on full display in the teen interactions. But also, like, do you remember when you could get four large pizzas for $53? I freaking miss those days. I got two pizzas for youth group this weekend, and it cost $50. Just two.
Yeah. So expensive. Mm-hmm, and nobody's making, like, none of the delivery people or workers are making more money to compensate for that. They're not the ones getting paid.
Right.
Ugh. Yeah. Also, I liked later on when he's like, blah, 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 your boyfriend. And she's like, it's ex-boyfriend, actually. He's been fired. I loved that. It was like, good.
Yep.
Because, and I think if she had stayed with him, with the jerk, she wouldn't be a fine old girl. Yeah. It's my theory.
Mm-hmm. Okay, switching to the military family. Was he the dad or the brother? I thought he was the dad.
The military family?
Yeah, the mom who is military, she went away. She comes back and she is reunited with her child. Is the dude the dad?
Yeah.
Of the child? Okay. You said brother at one point, but I think I was confusing that with the other brothers, because there are so many relations in this movie.
Yeah, okay. Well, and there's, like, two different, like, absentee family of origin things. There's the military mom, and then there's the older brother.
Yeah, and I think that's where I was getting my wires crossed. But anyway, the dad was, like, being really helpful and good to the kid for once. It's so rare to see, like, a good dad in a movie. And when he's talking about, you know how much you've told me that you miss mommy, you can tell mommy that it's okay. And I just love that cute little conversation. And then for him to be killed, like, sweet. Almost immediately after was fun, but
that was annoying. But I agree, I really liked that part where he's like
also I love how this is described as a small Midwestern town, but it's in Colorado, so I don't know how it's Midwestern.
They don't talk about it as Midwestern. They talk about it as West in the, like, summer.
I heard Midwestern in one of the lines. I swear I heard one of the military people was talking about a small Midwestern town, but I may be misremembering. Okay, well, we all know the
military are incompetent and don't know shit.
Yes.
So, even if they said Midwestern.
But it's clearly set around Colorado, because they talk about not being too far from Colorado Springs. And yeah, also, it has giant sewers for a small town. No town of the size that they're claiming to have would have sewers that are like two stories tall, but whatever. I also love the swimming. Oh, go ahead.
It is set in Gunnison.
Is that a real place?
Yeah, in Colorado.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. That's set in Gunnison, Colorado.
Gunnison is, in 2007, Gunnison's population was 5,491.
Oh, wow.
Now it is 6,794.
So still pretty small, but not, like, I still don't understand how they have sewers that big to support a town of 5,000 people.
Yeah, they shouldn't. It is just south of Eagle County, which is where I grew up. So it's in the mountains right on the western range, like what, just west of the Continental Divide, it looks like.
Ah, nice, nice.
Yeah.
I love the swimming pool fight with the teens, and how the aliens come and interrupt it and kill the teen, all the bad teens, but leave the good teens alive, I guess. But all I could think of during that, though, was I cannot wait to cover the film The Covenant on this podcast, which I really hope we can do for our witch season, because it's about a bunch of gay witches. It's not really gay, but like headcanon, they're all gay. Witches.
Mm-hmm. You can't call them not all gay. You don't know.
I mean, they all have girlfriends, so they're at least bi. But in my headcanon, they're all pretty gay for each other, too. And it's kind of so much homoerotic tension in that movie.
Okay, you're allowed to have girlfriends and still be queer.
Yes, 100%.
But yeah, the gay part, maybe not so much. Fair.
I also love the line when they run into the convenience store and they come across the two dudes and like, what are you guys, stoned? And they just kind of like, eh. And I'm like, yeah, that'd be me if I just like bury myself in a bunker and get stoned if the world was falling apart around me. And then another thing, I don't think the script writers and director understand how pregnancy works. How there are all these women in one room who are pregnant in a hospital. None of them are being monitored actively by nurses, just by machines. And then one nurse comes over to check on one. And she's like, my water just broke. As she's sitting in the hospital bed already. Which typically one goes to the hospital either after their water breaks or as soon as like. The contraction start or something like that. So I'm just like, what? That seemed made no damn sense to me.
She
could be in there for moderate something else. Risk. Like, yeah.
Yeah, if she has a high risk pregnancy, if she has monochromatic, dichromatic twins, I think you have to be in there early and stuff. But that, most of the time, you're going to be induced. Like, you're not, if you're there for a high-risk pregnancy, it's highly unlikely that you are going to wait till your water breaks.
Exactly. So at that point,
like, you're going to be in your own room with, at most, you have to share a room. But these days, most maternity wards or pregnancy labor delivery floors, people have their own rooms. So.
Right. And even in, like, the 90s, and 2000s, in the late 2000s, especially when this movie was set, the maternity ward of a hospital would not just be like one giant room with like 10 pregnant people in there.
Yeah. So. Like, even when it's not everybody has their own room, it's still at least like at most two people to a room.
Yep. Then we get to the military answer to everything, which is just to nuke it, because that's cool. And like nuke it too, like
actual nuclear bomb.
Right, which is going to cause massive nuclear fallout and cause a whole bunch of illness and high radiation and cancer and stuff for people within, like, 50-plus miles circumference around this town that they're trying to take out. Instead of just using other high ballistic weapons, which they could have done, but to nuke it? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I was why like, not? This is ridiculous.
But it does have the same ending as Resident Evil Apocalypse, Resident Evil 2, which came out in 2004, so I think that was probably taken directly from this, where they're trying to escape the zombie apocalypse, and the military just nukes the town, and they're flying away in a helicopter, and the nuke makes the helicopter go off course and crash and stuff. So, pretty much the exact same ending.
That seems intentional. Yeah. I mean, if they're not going to be totally ACAB, they'll at least be AMAB?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, the, like, this I think actually happens before the, like, nuke it stuff, but I put it in the wrong spot. But the, like, Macho Man Predator, like, this is the final battle against the alien. Take off all the armor and tech, and it's like... Mm-hmm. Do you want to kill it, or do you want to be macho? Apparently, you want to be macho. Okay. Both of you are going to get destroyed anyway. Have fun. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Also, at the end, when I saw her, I was like, was this Wutani? It was Ms. Wutani. I knew it.
It was. Woo.
I'm so proud of myself.
Yay.
Yeah.
Which means I think we can get into our deep dive. Talk about the theology of this crap movie.
Which was hard to find.
I found a few things, but even so, I agree. This is not a very good theological movie. Especially compared to the rest of the Alien franchise, at least, which seems to be very theological.
Yeah. Do you want to start with the title?
Sure. So, first off, why is it called Alien vs. Requiem? And what is a Requiem? So, Requiem is Latin for rest, but in the churchy world, it is usually referring to the funeral mass, sometimes called Mass for the Dead or Mass of Christian Burial. It has a long history in Eastern Orthodoxy, but also in Roman and Byzantine Catholicism. But other traditions too, like Anglicans and stuff, use Requiem terminology. But why is this movie called Requiem? I don't know. It just seems to be like, let's throw a cool title in there that let's sounds fancy.
Fancy.
Right? There's a lot of people who die, so that's cool. But I did notice,
both
like...
both the aliens and the predator die?
Yep. Everyone dies, except for, like, three or four... What? Four humans, I think, made out on the helicopter. But,
Maybe five. Wait. Did the girl make it?
There was... The two brothers made it. The military mom and her daughter. And then the one... blonde girl, final girl. So that's five.
Okay. Yeah. I thought she made it five. Yeah.
Okay. So the closest things I could find to connect it to a Requiem was in the beginning, they had a fanfare as it was like zooming in on the alien the xenomorph that bursts from the predator's abdomen. The fanfare this plays sounds stylistically similar to Mozart's Dies Irae, which is Day of Wrath, which is the opening of his Requiem. So maybe that's part of it. I don't know if that was intentional or not. And then also the themes of inevitability of death versus hope. So the final battle between alien and predator is futile because they both were about to die from the nuke anyway. So like, what's the point of even battling because they're both going to die? Yet there's still hope when there's life and stuff like that. So that kind of ties into the Requiem mass, which liturgy, which starts off very like depressingly with Day of Wrath, this in the historic Requiem of being this promise that God's wrath is going to come and destroy the world, but then the switch to calling for Jesus to have mercy on us and then hope in the resurrection. And so that's kind of what I got there.
Yeah, I was more thinking like, well, if we're talking about like the death, it pretty well clinches the death of the franchise. It doesn't, because obviously there's more, but like they literally had to retcon these out of the like canon for the franchise. So it was just that bad. That's all I got for the Requiem part and the death part.
Yeah. And this might be a little when you're doing something for yourself and no one else. Yeah, maybe, I guess. Shameless plug, self-aggrandizing, whatever. But, like, I wrote a few years ago this article called Queering Death, and I talk in there about the inevitability of death around Jesus and the resurrection of Lazarus. So I just want to read a quote here from that, and I'll make sure
it's linked in the show notes. I would just like to point out, before you read the quote, that it is shameless plug, which means there is no shame in it, and we will link to the article. And now that I've said it, it has to happen.
Okay, perfect. So this is a quote from the article. And about the resurrection of Lazarus from John's Gospel. And Jesus makes a big show of going to the grave, having it open, and calling for Lazarus to come out. Lazarus does come out. He is unbound from the burial clothes and let go. For what? To die again, right? To die a second time. Maybe it was a few days later, maybe it was years or decades later, but Lazarus dies again. Perhaps that's what Jesus was saying. Perhaps his reluctance to visit Lazarus was because he knew that Lazarus's death was inevitable, that Lazarus would die again and this time stay dead. So what was this performance with raising Lazarus from the dead? Just to prove a point? Why put the family through grief and mourning twice? Maybe it's because Jesus felt that human longing for the first time that comes after grief. The longing for that which is gone, that which will never return, at least not in the same way. And Jesus couldn't bear that grief. He couldn't bear the grief of Mary and Martha, of the community, of his disciples. He couldn't bear his own grief on his broad shoulders. The same broad shoulders that bore a cross couldn't bear the death of his beloved. And when I watch movies like this, like all horror movies, but especially movies like this, and we get a small band of survivors that make it to the end. They're gonna die again at some point, whether it's from old age or whatever. But also, the life they have now is gonna be full of trauma and trying to recover from this traumatic event that they barely escaped. So it's always in my mind of like the inevitability of death coming anyway. So is it really a victory to survive in the situation? And of course it is, yes. Where there's life, there's hope, all of those things. But at the same time, it just bears in mind this like inevitability, death is coming anyway, and so to make it out of this and then still to die however many years later is just depressing. Yeah. So
it's like Final Destination.
Yep.
Except that one's like it's coming for you now.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch that franchise on this. There's a new one coming out too, so a sixth entry coming out in the next year or so. So we'll cover that franchise eventually. I want to get Tony Todd on the podcast. I almost got him on for season 2, but that was a long time ago. And my contact for Tony Todd, I'm not sure would be able to help again. But Tony Todd's a cool dude. He played Candyman in the original Candyman. And he is also in the Final Destination franchise.
Oh, nice.
I also have stuff about diversity. So there's this Cracked article. If you're familiar with cracked.com, it's a humor magazine that switched to a web magazine a while ago, and I tried my hardest to find this article, and I can't find it. But basically the article was talking about this movie is so bad, it's a shitty script, it's a small budget, Yeah, it is one of the most diverse movies as far as characters. There are so many different characters, very diverse. By the end, of course, we still pretty much only the white people survive, which is really shitty. Yeah. But, like, just the idea, to, and especially in late 2000s, to pack a movie with this much diversity hadn't been done before. And so I thought that that was kind of a cool thing that that directors knew that we just have this shit movie, might as well make it what we want, and to flesh out these diverse characters was kind of cool. But the shitty part, of course, is that only the white people survive, so is it that cool? Probably not. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And, well, and that's, like, the... So I don't know what parts of diversity I was talking about, like, certainly in the casting, but, like, also there's a lot more diversity in the characters, in the sense that, like, we have folks who are homeless and living in the sewer system, and we have a military mom, and we have two brothers, and, like, all of those sort, that sort of, like, family, familial status diversity, I guess, where, like, it feels very queer how the families are, how the, like, actual characters are connected. Yeah. and how they live their lives because of the different ways that people are actually in chosen families or in families where there's someone who is not physically present for long amounts of time and that sort of a thing. And so I think that, I mean, it's another aspect of the diversity, and also the, like, two of the three, the military mom and the brothers,
mm-hmm.
Military mom and kid and the brothers all survive, but they're also, like, but the homeless family doesn't, right? Like, the homeless chosen family, which in some ways is the queerest of them, does not. They get wiped out almost immediately. Also, the toxic masculinity and the sexism is great. It's everywhere, so, and it's always in this, but it's in it in particular ways in this movie. So the, like, predator versus prey final battle, right, where he's like, I'm gonna take off all of the things that protect me and keep me safe and alive. And then also the, like, ex-boyfriend who gets fired. And that, like, guess I know who ordered the sausage.
yeah.
And then ultimately the police officer being like, this is the thing, like, we have to follow the what the military says and go to the center of the town, and the military mom being like, absolutely not, that is the recipe for disaster and death, and then he just, like, won't believe her, and therefore he dies. Yeah. But that is the, like, most in the alien movies, it seems like that is the most common thread of, like, there will always be some version of toxic masculinity, sexism, that has a man not believing a woman who's smarter than him and then dying because of it, or putting everybody at risk because of it or whatever. So I appreciate that that always comes up in the alien movies.
Yeah. For sure.
Also, can you just explain to me the aliens, the xenomorphs?
What about them?
Okay. There's one xenomorph who is a predator xenomorph, right? And yes. The rest are just, like, regular xenomorphs?
Regular xenomorphs that attack, that come from humans, yes.
Yeah. Okay. And this, the predator xenomorph is the one in the final battle, right?
Yes.
The predator xenomorph has, it has the acidic blood. Is the blood green, too, or just acidic?
Yeah.
Okay.
Green. I think the Predalien's blood is green and acidic.
Okay. And it can turn invisible?
I don't think so. No. Did it?
Okay. I think that's just a technology of the predators. I thought it was the technology of the predators.
Yeah.
But then it seemed like somebody else was also turning invisible, and I was confused. I was confused about who was who in this.
Yeah. It's hard to tell. And it also doesn't help. that so much of the Alien versus Predator scenes take place like in very, it's very dimly lit and it's just all dark blues and stuff. So it's like hard to even make out anything. And I hate movies when they do that. It's like, stop putting these gross filters over the movie. Then we can't see anything.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. Especially anyway. If we're watching it on, I mean, I wasn't, I was watching it in a dark room this time, but a lot of times I watch it on my computer and then there's like bright sky in the background and I don't have curtains. And so it's like, I can't see anything. Yeah.
Getting with the Predalien is one of the things I like about the Predalien is that, well, I don't like, one of the cool things I guess about it is that it can impregnate people without needing a queen, and it just does it from mouth to mouth and like drops the eggs into the person's. Yeah, so that's a weird cool evolution of the Predalien, but it's also but it's also kind of a kink, and a kind of a kink of mine is the egg laying alien kink. You can buy all sorts of dildos with that. Oh my god. But
it's
that much
true,
aside.
You can. Oh my gosh. I didn't even think about
that. But right. That much aside, there is the slaughter of the innocent scene where like the Predalien is just like hovering over these babies and we don't see what happens, but we assume they died anyway. Whether it's from the alien or the nuclear explosion, they died. But it seems to admit that the alien just killed them and ate them. So I guess the Predalien is hungry for babies. And then also the Predalien impregnates already impregnated people, which is a new thing for the franchise.
That?
I don't know. I really don't know.
It does not make sense to me.
The last thing I have for deep dive is the military, which I already said military solution for everything is just blow it up. But I love the one line in there where the one woman's like, that's crazy. The government doesn't lie to people. I'm just like, what? What world do you live in? This is even in 2007. We already knew a lot of this shit about like the weapons of mass destruction had come out and all that stuff. Like, come on.
And even like if it hadn't been the weapons of mass destruction stuff, like the government always is known, like everybody knows that there's some amount of lying that happens. That's
yep.
Yeah. It's like
and then I was just gonna say the military when the helicopter lands or crashes and they're rescued kind of by the military people in the woods. They're like, why did you just blow up this whole town of people? And the military guy says, we were just following orders. And the amount of times we hear that in history from things like the Holocaust to genocides to all sorts of things. We're just following orders. Yeah. That's not an excuse.
Yeah, there is... What was I watching? Oh, when I was reading, so, Bitter Blue... In the Graceling Realm series, there's, like, this big, massive, like, brainwashing type thing that happened because of a whole, like, in-universe thing. But the Bitter Blue at one point is, like, how do I teach people to think for themselves and to not just follow orders? And one of her advisors, she's the queen, and one of her advisors is, like, I think first you have to start with giving honorable orders. And letting people do honorable things. And then you can start to move towards the thinking for themselves. But when people have been brainwashed and trained and, like, literally brainwashed by this other person, like, to do whatever is told to them, which is very harmful and involves killing and torture and all of those things, then, like, yeah, it has to... You can't just go to now think for yourselves. You have to do it in smaller steps. And I think... That's part of, like, how do we reprogram what it means to be military? Because right now, it is follow orders at all costs. And how do we get to the place where, like, there is room to question orders without, while still having the, like, honorable or the, like, whatever to necessary to like in emergency situations or in situations where they don't have time to explain it. Like, how do you navigate that? How do you, and you know, I have my own opinions about whether or not the military is a valid thing that should be continued, but I think no matter what, we have to figure out how do you navigate that, because right now there's just so much conflicting stuff, right? Like, there's an official policy against sexual harassment and rape, and then also when people raise that or file complaints about that, like, they're not treated right, and too many people still are, like, go missing or are killed, and it's suspicious circumstances. Yeah. But, yeah, of course they don't care about casualties. Of course, they're just going to do whatever they want or need to do. It does seem a little bit surprising that they didn't try to keep anything, but I also think that that's probably at least a little bit because they knew they couldn't get away with keeping anything without it. I don't know, like, in the future, they try to keep alien stuff, and now they're like, not at all. We know it's going to be a shit show.
I mean, so they did keep the Predator stuff, though.
Yeah, but that's just, like, technology. Right? Like, I get them keeping the technology and wanting to mess with that. I think it wouldn't end well, right? Like, eventually the Predator's gonna come for it. But they're not trying to keep the aliens. And in the future, like, the whole Alien franchise is based around they're trying to get the aliens themselves, not the technology. So, I don't know. That was just a lot of me rambling.
I love it. I think that's it for our deep dive, though, so we can get into our AI alien lore.
There was no AI in this one, because it's a prequel, but still.
Yep. Just like in the last one, there was no AI. But we'll get plenty in the next two, so don't worry. But there is blue... We learned that predators now have a blue acidic sort of goo that can erase only the things it wants to. They want it to erase. Mm-hmm. We are introduced to Yutani Corp after we've already been introduced to Weyland last film, so I think that's a nice tie-in. We get the Predalien, which can have multiple impregnations through mouth-to-mouth, and the impregnations come out as, like, triplets, and they are birthed fast, as opposed to, like, the day or two or three days of others. I also like the change in special effects for the predators. They have their invisibility has this cool lightning effect now, and their heat vision, the few times it showed it, what seemed a little bit more realistic than past films, but still widely variant.
And it's like, they have the heat filter and they have a X-ray night vision type filter. Also, you know, those are all the things that I had to. Also, the aliens come with nests and webs, which, like, they kind of had before, but this was, like, very web-like. Whereas before, it was kind of like a hive. It felt more hive-like, and this was felt more web-like, I think, for the pregnant people who were killed.
Yep. Yeah. Well, we'll see where we go from here. Two more alien films to cover that are released, and then there's one more that's yet to be released in August, which we'll cover one day. Maybe in a future space season or something. So do you want me to rate it first?
Patreon episode.
Oh, that too, maybe. Do you want me to rate it first, or do you want to rate it first?
I can rate it first.
Oh, cool. So I have 10 alien jazz hands.
I'm giving it a 3. 3 alien jazz hands. I thought about, like, a 2.5. it was just bad. The only redeeming quality is military mom is right.
Yeah.
And the proving right of women who know things. And an accurate portrayal, I think, of a lot of the military, right? Like, the people who get in it for particular reasons, and then the actual military, what it actually ends up being. So, and my favorite kill, which I predicted from the first time I met him, was the fired ex-boyfriend asshole.
Yep.
Yeah. What about you?
I will rate it a 2 regular xenomorph jazz hands and then 1 pred alien jazz hand for a total of 3. And my favorite kill, or multiple kills actually, it is all the hospital deaths, from the boldness of actually implying that babies are killed, which is rare in cinema.
Yeah.
To the weird like impregnating of their pregnant women, but also the doctor when the pred alien's inner mouth went through his head and burst through his head was also kind of cool death. So it's just like a whole bunch of cool kind of weird deaths.
Yeah. In the hospital. It was like back-to-back. It does seem like this was a new step in, like, they've shown child deaths in the series, but like also at the very beginning the kid gets a chest burster and we see the we were watching it with friend of the podcast, Susanna Porter, and she pointed that out. She's like, wow, the kid gets a chest burster. That's like pushing the boundaries of like what is acceptable even for horror. And I think that the pregnant people especially was, yeah. Do you think that the alien fetuses like ate the human fetuses? They're like running around in her stomach, that one that we see
right first. I think so.
Ooh. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Ooh. I had 0 jump scares.
Okay. Yeah. Again, not very scary movie. This whole season, like the Alien 1 and Alien 3 are pretty scary, but the rest of the movies so far have not really been scary. Or yeah. Super horror-y, so. Mm-hmm. Well, what's next our next up. Movie?
Our next movie is Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi, with special guest Brooke McClain, who's back from her many visits to our podcasts.
Yay!
She was a guest on our 2016 Ghostbusters movie, and she's been a guest on Nerds at Church for Reformation. She and Pace are 2 Reformation guests for a deep dive into coffee.
Yeah.
For Reformation.
Which I almost wrote an angry letter. Well, I did write an angry letter, but I don't think that one got read on the podcast.
I don't think you sent it.
I sent it through Messenger. Facebook Messenger.
That's not an angry letter. That's just
I sent an angry Facebook Messenger.
That's texting with me and Kay. You gotta, send it to Nerds at Church to get that stuff read.
Okay, fine. Duly noted.
I didn't realize that was what you were trying to do. Otherwise, I probably would have, but...
But for the record, even though that was, a Reformation and a half ago, coffee did not exist in Europe until after the Reformation.
Yeah, we said that. But
no,
good to give up. There's a meme, and we couldn't give up the meme, and so we did it. Because it was fun. Not because it was historically accurate. Just probably Martin Luther did not nail 95 Theses to a door.
He probably did, though. That's one of the weird things that historians are back and forth on. I'm on the side that he did. A lot of historians are like, no, he didn't, but whatever. If he did nail them, it probably wasn't on Reformation Day. Reformation Day was just the day that the mail was posted that he sent it to. This is not a Reformation episode of Horror Nerds at Church, though, so we will talk about Star Wars Episode 8, Last Jedi, as Emily said, is next, but then in 2 weeks we're going to pick up in the Alien franchise with Prometheus, the brooding AI-heavy movie that I cannot wait to watch. But that's it for our show. Our theme music was by Matt May. We release seasonally on Thursdays, unless I'm behind on editing, and then we'll see what happens when these episodes get released. But please comment, rate, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Support us on Patreon. Get access to exclusive movie commentary episodes, BooTube episodes, and more bonus content by going to patreon.com/horrornerdsatchurch. It starts at only $5 to sign up, so much cheaper than the $50 worth of pizza that you can get for two pizzas. Follow us on our social...
Right. A third of one pizza.
Yes. Follow us on our socials, Facebook and Insta, Horror Nerds at Church, and Blue Sky and Twitter, HNACPOD, for all the latest updates about upcoming films, news, and other announcements. Until next time, if you're going to make out with an alien, use contraception because they might impregnate you through your mouth.
Safe kissing.
Or something.